Well, we have 9 more holes to go, so how about you two fellas follow me to the 10th tee?
On to the back 9, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of Hall of Famer Billy Casper.
2 players down the middle on the 10th hole.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Well, thank you very much and welcome in. It is the back 9, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio. From the Masters Tournament, the 88th edition at Augusta National Golf Club, it's a pleasure to be here for, I think, Bob, the 17th year.
Yeah.
As credentialed press.
Brian, let me first say.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, well, you know what? Hey, it's a lottery for a reason, and most people don't win the lottery.
Yeah. You've won it once.
13 years ago.
Yeah. I've won it twice.
So you got that going for you.
Yeah, which is nice.
Twice as nice. I'm not going to be playing golf at Augusta National on Monday, but that's okay. I'm here to watch the guys that are playing this weekend, and boy, do we have a good-looking leaderboard. Ooh. I'm excited for the way this is shaping up. It does it every year, right? Yep. I mean, it's an invitational. They invite the best players, and so no surprise when the best players are indeed at the top when this thing makes the turn on moving day Saturday. So, world number one, Scotty Scheffler, all of the chips were on Scotty. The pressure's on him. World number one, he's won twice, finished runner-up. He's won the Masters 2 years ago, and the expectations were that Scotty was going to be the guy, and he's backing it up. Bob, what do you say? How impressive is it? It's one thing to do it when people don't see you coming, but when everybody expects you to do it and you do, there's an extra level of respect from me.
Of course, Scotty Scheffler is tied for the lead with Bryson DeChambeau and Max Homa, but Scotty Scheffler in the first round made 6 birdies and no bogeys. He had birdies on 3 of the par 5s, 3 of the 4 par 5s, and 3 of the 4 par 3s. In his second round, he 3 birdies and 3 bogeys. But I'll tell you what, it was a tough day in the second round, especially with the wind, and Scotty Scheffler held strong and is tied for the lead, and those guys are at 6 under par going into the weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be something. I'll tell you what. Hey, coming up, we're going to welcome in America's favorite caddy. He's going to join us for a couple of segments this hour, and then we'll reset everything to get you ready for the weekend at the Masters. Excited about that. You know what? We got some great sound. Speaking of Scotty Scheffler, talking about the wind and how difficult it was to guess and figure it out, and he takes us through the back 9 a little bit through Amen Corner and the challenges that that presents on a normal week here at Augusta, but especially with these high winds. Bob, I've never seen anything like it. Max Homa, here's some comments about him talking about a sandblasting there on 18 and what it was like to play with Tiger Woods. All of that is still to come here on the back 9, hour number 2. But man, I am so excited for the weekend. My favorite weekend in golf, no doubt about it.
Yep, it is a phenomenal. And I just can't wait for Saturday and Sunday to play themselves out and see who's there on the back 9.
In the last holes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all comes down to that. Stay tuned. We'll get into it next. America's favorite caddy, next right here on a Masters edition of Real Golf Radio.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Welcome back to Real Golf Radio from the Masters. Thanks so much for joining us as we talk about the 88th Masters and what has been a gusty and a difficult challenge for these players. No question about it. And let's welcome in for some analysis and some great commentary. As always, it's America's favorite caddy.
There are bag rats. And then there are caddies. Maybe. Pro jocks who are legends in caddy shacks across the PGA Tour.
While we can neither confirm nor deny the existence of this legendary looper,
here he is, the caddy on Real Golf Radio.
Hey, caddy joins us weekly here on Real Golf Radio, and always a treat to have him on for Masters Week. Caddy, good morning. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. I wonder if Teddy Scott ever gets up on the tee for their first round of the tournament and looks at the guys in the group and says to the other players, I got more Masters than any of you guys have wins.
Wow.
I don't know. He wouldn't say that.
No, he wouldn't do that.
I thought you were going to be like kind of like Seabiscuit. I love that movie where the jockeys are kind of like smack talking as they're getting into the, you know, starting gates and all that kind of stuff with the horses that they're on. Is that what you're saying? Like he's got a little swagger right now. He's riding the best horse, huh?
I got to tell you what, caddies do not smack talk almost at all because golf just beats you up too much. By the time you get to that level, you've been beat up so bad, you know you don't mess around with golf by doing anything like that.
Yeah, you don't want to tempt fate. You don't want to tempt fate. You don't want to say catch us if you can, whatever. You don't want to say it.
Oh, I like that.
Don't go there. Don't mess. Just leave it alone. Don't poke the bear.
That's it.
Or the tiger. Or the
Shuffler. So, Bob, have you ever been out there? In all my masters, I think I did 8 of them. I don't remember. You know what? There was a day that was something like this, but it wasn't this windy. That Friday around, it was impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. The sun, the sand coming out of the bunkers, all that kind of thing. I remember Steve Jones was playing one year, and he was on the 7th green. He said the sand was flying out of the bunkers, too. I think that was the year that Zach Johnson won. But, yeah, it the wind gusts up to 35 miles an hour, maybe if not more. And, you know, it's been nice weather. It's been bright and sunny after that first day. But I'll tell you what, the wind's blowing hard, and it is wreaking havoc with the guys.
I'm impressed that, do we know what the average score was on Friday? It must have been 75.
It was probably pretty real close to that.
Way up there, yeah. Oh, I somebody asked me, hey, what would a 20 handicap shoot out there today? And I said, well, let's change that. I think a good scratch player who wins your club championship, and he's that guy at the club that everybody's like, that guy's really good, you know? I'm giving him an over under a 42 putts if he plays today.
Mm.
42.
Wow.
You just can't, I mean, those greens are so difficult when everything's perfect. You throw this wind into there, and you're going to be putting it in the bunkers and putting it in the water, and then you're not going to get an uphill putt. You have no idea. You have no idea what to do out there.
Caddy, have you ever seen green complexes change that quick because of weather? I mean, as far as wind is concerned, when they're actually pretty good at the start of the day, and have you seen them change like crazy drastically like they are right now?
It's that's pretty rare. You can get that maybe at a Pebble Beach U.S. Open where the wind can rip the moisture out in a hurry. It's kind of was a day-to-day thing from Friday to Saturday at that 82, was it the 92 U.S. Open?
Yeah.
When the whole complexion flipped 180. It just flipped because of the wind driving the grease. But no, I've not, I'll tell you where Augusta can really change is from Wednesday to Thursday, right? You're practice around Wednesday and you go out there Thursday and it's like, what is a different golf course? What happened? They can do that to you there. With just doing it themselves, right? A little moisture, that's one you got to be careful of if you haven't been there before, is understanding how fast that first green is and you don't even know it. But no, I was trying to describe, like, what is this like? Okay, take a pool table, put it in the back of your pickup truck, get on a slightly bumpy road and go 25 or 30 miles an hour, tilt the pool table a little bit and try to make a putt on it. That's about what you're looking at.
So no big deal, huh?
No big deal. No big deal. Yeah. Now, I have so much respect for how good these guys are in the bad conditions. That's where you really see how good they are when it's just impossible. And they're still, I mean, you got two guys. I mean, it's crazy that all these guys are under par. It's just so hard.
Yeah.
Can't explain.
Well, let me just say, these guys are pretty good players, right? Emiliano Grillo, he's a pretty good player, right? He shot 83 on Friday. Yeah. You got Taylor at 81, Nick Taylor. You got Gary Woodland, 81. You got Charles Schwartzel, 81. Adrian Meronk, 80. Steven Yeager, he just won a PGA Tour event, didn't he? Shot 80. Bubba Watson's got a couple green jackets. He shot 80. Dustin Johnson's all right, isn't he? He shot 79 along with Sergio Garcia. So, yeah, I mean, some of these, you know, these guys are great players. You know, Justin Rose, pretty good player, 78. So it's tough. Tony Finau, I mean, he shot 70 in the first round, had it going, and just couldn't get it in the house Friday afternoon and comes in with a 78. Joaquin Niemann, the star of the LIV Tour, 78 on Friday. So, yeah, I mean, these guys are – here's something interesting I just really noticed, barely noticed as we were talking. Mike Weir, of all guys, 77. I mean, of all the guys I just mentioned with all of that horsepower, where's he? Got him by a shot or more. That's pretty cool stuff.
Well, he's got Terry Hope, Bernhard Langer's on caddy on the back. So he's got a secret.
That's correct. Yep.
Terry's the man.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about players and how much respect we have for them playing in conditions like this. How about caddies? Caddies are having to judge wind and help the player pull club. Sometimes when I was caddying for Keith Clearwater, I would balk, man. What do you think? Is it a five or a six? And I didn't know what to say. It's got to be very frustrating with these types of conditions.
First hole, U.S. Open, Hazeltine, I think it was 92. The year Payne Stewart ended up winning. The very first hole of the tournament, I'm working for Nolan Henke. The wind's howling. It's 25, sideways on number one. He says to me, "You like five iron?" I go, "Yep." And he kind of stares at it, and then he goes, "How about six?" I go, "Yeah, I like six." And he just starts laughing. So he holds his second shot for it, too.
With which club?
Six?
I believe it was the six iron. Okay. I'd have to look back. But I believe it was the six. But as he walks to the green, he looks at me and he says, "Remember this moment. This will be the last time I'm ever in red numbers at a U.S. Open."
Nice foreshadowing.
Way to pre-frame. Yep.
And he was tied for the lead going to Saturday, of course. But it's so difficult to judge. And you have so much, you're mentally done. You're toast after a day like Friday at Augusta mentally. You're just, because you've expended so much energy. You're not only trying to judge the wind, you're thinking about, okay, what if the gust does this? Where do we want to put the ball? It's really, where do we want to avoid disaster on every shot? What's the big miss here? And then you just, you know, look, did you guys see Rory hit it in the water on 11? What his reaction?
Totally.
So he hits it in the water. He makes a good looking swing on 11 and it goes in the water. It's not even close to hitting land. And he and Harry just start laughing. They they're doubled over laughing because the ball got abused so bad by the wind. So there you go.
So after the first round, we were sitting in the media center and we were talking with Scottie Scheffler, and he said that on the 11th hole in the first round, it's dead into the wind and that pins up front. And he's like, I think he was 215, and he said he was hitting a four iron. Okay. And it came up short of the green, and he hit it good. 35 yards of wind knocked the ball down and kept it short of the green with four iron. He ended up getting up and down for par.
And it's about, what, 5, 6, 7 yards downhill?
Exactly.
So it plays short.
Yep.
The problem with 11 that nobody, you rarely see, but it's there. There's these big mounds and slopes short right of the green. So you can easily, fly a ball 20 some yards short of the green, and it ricochets straight left towards that pond and will go in the pond. So you got to be careful if you have to land one short of the green there.
Yeah.
You got to watch out for all those mobiles on the right.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool stuff. I just, man, it's crazy out there. And just hats off to the guys, you know, under par for two rounds. That's impressive.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Hey, Caddy, we got to take a short break. Can we continue with you on the other side?
I'll mark.
You'll mark. I like that. There you go. I'll mark. I mark. I think that's what he was saying there. Look, you're not going to get the caddy off the mic talking the Masters. He's got more
he
to
loves
say.
It.
I know he's got more to say. We'll come back with the caddy as we continue here our Masters edition of Real Golf Radio.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Talking golf with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
One day you'll get it.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Welcome back. Masters edition of Real Golf Radio. Brian Taylor, Bob Casper, and America's favorite caddy continuing with us right now. I wanted to play you something. Max Homa talking about the mental aspect that he went through on Friday. This was some good stuff. Homa's a great interview. Tell me what you think here.
I wrote something in my journal yesterday that just said, however good I am is how good I am. I don't need to try to be better than I am. And I can just see wherever that takes me. Maybe it's winning this, maybe it's not. And I'm okay with that. I know what I've put into this game, you know, trying to get every ounce back doesn't really work. And I've tried that part. So I just feel like so much of it has just been from just making golf swings that feel good to me. aren't always the right one, I would say, you know, for what maybe a commentator would look at, but picking the right ones, I mean, I'm not sure which shot would or which hole would lean in most to that, but there were just moments of trusting myself, like on four today and hitting the 7-wood instead of just taking the 4-iron in the bunker. Joe wanted me to hit the 7-wood and just take it on, but he said, if you feel better just hitting it in the bunker, we can do that too. So I guess that's just backing myself a bit, but then other times of playing just the low driver I've hit around here in the wind instead of trying to hit the high, cool one at times when the wind was off the left because it just doesn't fit me. So just being really patient with that and discipline, I feel like is, I guess, a testament to those kind of the mental goals I've set for myself.
Pretty interesting stuff. And you know, he wrote in his journal that he is who he is. He's as good as he is, and he doesn't try to be better than he is. It's really interesting, kind of an approach that he's taken. And he talked about those mental goals and how it's working for him. Not trying to hit the hero shot, but keeping it all within himself, even if that's not what a quote unquote commentator might suggest he does. What do you think of that? Pretty cool, huh?
It is. Unfortunately, the first thing that came to my twisted mind was Storch Molly from Saturday Night Live. And doggone it, people like me. Okay, let's throw out the comedic effect there. So here's what I'm hearing there, really. It's what you can take from that, besides the mental game aspect of it. He's talking about, I did this with the driver, I hit the slow cut instead of that. That's why players learn and you get experience as you go along. You start learning, what can I do under pressure? What under major championship pressure? It just, that's why it takes guys a while to learn how to max out their games. And some guys learn that better than others. And he sounds like he's doing that. And yeah, it's pretty cool to hear, but that's what that is. I mean, there's a lot more to golf than just swinging a club well and executing well and thinking fairly well. You also have to know, how do you play under, what do you do under the pressure and how do you deal with it? And you don't know till you're there. That's why Tom Watson probably lost a bunch of tournaments and then figured out how to win them. And he was off to the races because it just takes time to figure it out.
You know, and Tiger went around and said that, you know, he strikes the ball really, really well. And he's learned how to do that. You know, Max Homa was on tour for quite a few years before he ever won. And then he started winning and having some success. He was on the Ryder Cup team. His last major championship that he played was the Open Championship, and that was his first top 10 in a major championship. And here he is, you know, right at the top of the leaderboard at 6 under par at Augusta under extremely difficult, tough positions. And conditions, and so you know, now he's gonna learn what it's like to be up there after two rounds and have better conditions, and what he needs to do to continue to move forward and have a chance come Saturday or Sunday on the back nine.
I wouldn't be surprised to hear Homa comment if he wins a major, does something like that. I wouldn't be surprised to him to point back to that 18th hole at the Ryder Cup when he was just in a whole other world of nervousness that he'd never experienced before, and he executed and he'd made the putt and he did all that. And I think those little moments in careers are a big deal in your mental jar.
Yeah.
You get scarred by it or you can have success. It's wild. You look at Tiger and Jack. Tiger and Nicklaus both didn't experience any failure at all for a long time. You take the really good college players, like take Scott Verplank and Phil Mickelson. They were that good coming out of college like Tiger and Jack were, but they both took a while to get to that, you know, to a higher level in the pro game. And so I think the reason Tiger ended up having the great career he did was because he had that early success at the Masters. And he, you know, when you're the next Jack Nicklaus and you don't perform for a year or two like that, you can start doubting yourself. And Tiger, I think it's really important that you just don't have that stumble if you're one of the great players. You don't have that stumble along the way. And only a couple guys have not had that stumble along the way. And Tiger's one of them and Jack's one of them.
Yeah,
and look at all the men they won.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. No scars for a long time, either of those guys.
So how about Scottie Scheffler, world number one? You know, here he is, you know, coming off two wins, API players, runner-up at Houston, and he's right in position again to get a second green jacket. I mean, he's the world number one, and he's playing like it, and he just seems to have such a great attitude as he approaches these. And I know you have a lot of respect and admiration for Teddy and what he's able to do, and Scotty also giving the credit to Teddy for, quote-unquote, guessing on the wind and all that type of thing. Just how about how he's playing and able to continue that play in the tracks of the guys you just mentioned?
Scotty, scary, bad news for everybody else out there. Scotty looks like he's peaking with his game right now, and the putter looks good, and you don't want to hear that if you're having to beat Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah,
you don't want any part of that.
Yeah,
anything can happen, but I certainly would not. I would not bet against Scottie Scheffler on the weekend here. But golf is weird. You never know. But he looks better than he's looked with every facet of his game to me than he has in a long time right now. So
how about Bryson? I know you've been an interesting observer of Bryson over the years, and we haven't seen a lot out of him since he's gone to live, but pretty impressive 65 in that first round. Ridiculous. Fought through a 73 in the second.
So one thing I'll tell you about Bryson is he is not scared to succeed. He has no fear of success. He expects that to happen. He's got a good head on his, he's a winner. When he has a chance, the moment's not bigger than Bryson, right? It's bigger than it's the moment's too big for a lot of people, but Bryson has that mindset, where it's not too big for him. So he's got that. I think he's a much better player than he was a few years ago at this golf course. And the swing looks good. He's kind of like Scotty. Everything looks good. Everything looks fine-tuned with him right now. So, you know, you might see both those guys play ridiculously well on the weekend when these crazy – are we losing the crazy windy conditions for the weekend?
Yeah.
I think you're going to see some really good scoring between those two guys. You know, Max is playing well too. But I wouldn't be surprised if Scheffler and DeChambeau do a little Watson Nicholas Turnberry type thing. If Scotty's on his A game though, I don't know if Bryson can catch him.
Caddy's calling it.
Yeah.
Watson and Nicholas. Hey, how about this guy that I don't know, he's tied for 21st right now. He's 48 years old. He's had all these surgeries. He goes out and shoots 72 today and makes the cut for the 24th time in a row, Tiger Woods.
So Tiger has two challenges to overcome. They're difficult to overcome. You watch him just static hitting a golf ball chip. Putty looks great. He's got his ball speed way up there, faster than most of the tour players do. So physically, it's not a power problem. It's not a distance problem. His two challenges are, how bad is that walking going to drag him down as we go along? And also, kind of one that's, I think, as important or more, is he just doesn't have all the reps under his belt. And I know he's got all the experience in the world, but there's just no way your game can quite get to that level if you're not playing enough golf over and over and over. It takes reps and, you got to get in that. So he's missing that, and there's nothing he can do because he can't play enough to do that anymore. But it doesn't mean for 2 days he couldn't be spectacular. It'd be really cool, but would it shock you if he shot 68, 65 on the weekend and it was no?
No.
Why would that shock you? Yeah. He can do it. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What a story that would be. Caddy, great stuff as always. We appreciate the insights and your time. Enjoy the weekend of the Masters, my friend.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Now, there you go.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I thought he'd give us a Vern Lundquist since he's on his way out and playing his final Masters. Come on, go ahead and drop it. Give us a yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
There it is. All right, we leave you with that. That was the Caddy joining us here from the Masters right here on Real Golf Radio. Stay tuned. More of the show next.
Now, back back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
It means I have a chance going in the weekend. I'm here. I got a chance to win the golf tournament. I don't know if they're all going to finish today, but I'm done. I got my my two rounds in. Just need some food and some caffeine, and I'll be good to go.
All right, that's Tiger when he was asked about what it means to make his record 24th consecutive cut at the Masters, doing it here in the 88th edition. And typical Tiger competitor fashion, he just says it means he's hanging around and he's got a chance to win. His mind's still in that competitive, I'm going to go give it all I got and try to pick up a coveted 6th green jacket and tie Jack Nicklaus. It'd be the most unbelievable story ever if he was to go on and do that.
It would be an amazing story. He's 7 back right now. Guys have come from 7 behind. Gary Player came from 7 behind to win. Nick Faldo came from 6 behind to win. So, and that was just in the last round. So, don't put it past Tiger. I think he's got some under par rounds in him. You know, 72 in the second round with all that wind and everything. That was amazing.
Yeah, really unbelievable. People wanted to know, what did you see from Tiger? How did he look? How did he walk? How did he, how was he able to go about his game? What would you describe what you saw, especially compared to a year ago?
Well, his ball striking was a little tough, and that is because of the winds and everything that went on. But his short game, his pitching, his chipping, and his putting was actually really, really good. Now, as far as body is concerned, of course, yeah, he's going to walk with a little bit of a limp because he has a fused ankle. But he said the biggest part of his soreness and his discomfort and his pain and everything is not because of his ankle, because it's fused. It's the rest of his body compensating for that with him, with his golf swing and stuff. I thought it was kind of interesting. Golf Channel was talking about him. He can't make a big move with it with his lower body right now. So he's kind of bulked up with his upper body, and that's where he's getting his strength and his ball speed is because of his upper body with his swing.
Well, you and I talked about that. You know, it's like if you can't push off, then you've got to kind of sling a little bit more, and you see that. You can see his upper body is making more of a move at it than the lower body. Yep. He used to sit, right? That's one thing you love about Tigers. He'd come through, and he would just sit right into it, right?
Yep.
And that lower body would, that hip turn and everything would drive.
And then he would push off.
And he would push off to finish it out, and he can't do that anymore, so he's had to modify his swing. Nevertheless, he's able to get it around. And I'll tell you, but maybe even more so than asking you, Bob, which you're a good observer of the game, there's no question. I don't want to take that away from you. But Max Homa had a front row seat. He was asked after the second round what it was like playing with Tiger Woods.
It was just a dream to get to play with him here. You know, I've been saying I've always wanted to just watch him at iron shots around here, and I was just right up next to him. It was really cool. His short game was just so good. I just don't think I can explain how good some of the chip shots he hit today were. And he's just special. I mean, we had a really quick turnaround. And if I was feeling tired and awful, I imagine he was feeling even worse. He just is, like, he understands his golf course so well, but he just hits such amazing golf shots. His iron play is so good that even when they did miss the green, you could just tell it had so much control. And just watching him on 18, we got sandblasted for like 45 seconds, and I turned around 5 times so I didn't get crushed in the face, and I just looked back, and he's just standing there like a statue, and then poured it right in the middle. So all the cliches you hear about him and all the old stories about how he will grind it out, it's fun to see that in person.
I have this image now that will never go out of my mind of Tiger Woods, the statue, standing amongst the sandstorm on the 18th green of Augusta, impervious and impregnable to the buffetings of the winds of Augusta in the 88th Masters. And, you know, Max just didn't even have the stomach to look at it.
And the sands from the front left bunker.
That's what I mean. blowing up there. Well, let's look. Bob, when you say he's one over par, you kind of wonder, well, how did he get there?
Yep.
What if I told you he had 6 birdies and 7 bogeys?
There you go.
That's it.
That's it.
How many 3 putts? 0.
Zippo.
That is an amazingly clean card, given the circumstances and given his lack of reps, as he would say, coming into this championship. It's remarkable.
Yeah, it was fun to watch him pour some really nice putts in for pars. You know, we saw him do it on 14. He made a nice putt on 14 from about 6 or 8 feet to make a par on 14 to keep his round going. And then a beautiful 5 wood into the 15th hole and a nice 2-putt to make a birdie. A beautiful shot into 16, getting it up and down on 17, and then also, up and down from short left on 18, left of the front left bunker, and pitching it up there to another 5 or 6 feet and making that. So his short game was working, his putter was working, and for the most part, his golf game was working, because the round he shot of 72 was phenomenal when the lowest round of the day was only 69.
Yeah, that's – how about that?
Yep.
You got contrasting that, you got Max Homa making 9 birdies to just 3 bogeys, which is super impressive. And as far as putting goes, also 0-3 putts. And I know that's something that you always look at, right? I mean, it's pretty rare that a Masters champion has more than maybe 1 3 putt. And I can't even comprehend that. You heard the caddy talk about – that he would put the over-under at 40. Was it 46 putts or 42 putts?
42 putts, I think,
42 putts,
yeah.
And you're talking about – he's talking about your club champion.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
the best player
of the difficulty.
Your club.
The difficulty of the greens already add in the wins.
Right.
He put over-under 42 putts.
Right, and the more those greens dry out, the slicker they get, and because there's no friction. As the greens dry out, there's no moisture in the green, there's no friction, there's nothing to stop the ball. We saw balls roll across the green on 12 in the second round that just made it to the fringe that rolled down the bank and went into Ray's Creek. So it's difficult to make putts, let alone hit putts soft enough and be able to hold it online. Tiger talked about the ball moving on the greens, whether you were putting or chipping. And for him to make those putts, it was amazing.
Yeah, unbelievable. We talk always about the history of the game and the history here at Augusta and the trends and the things you got to look at, right? And in the first round, we talked about how the biggest comeback after 18 holes is 7 shots. So when you look at that, players at basically at even par or better, because Bryson goes out and shoots at 65.
Right.
So outside of 7 after day 1 was Tiger Woods, Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, Jason Day. Those are some of the favorites that I was looking at. And Tiger got himself back in position because now it jumps to round 2 and you're within 8.
Yes.
So does the outside the 54 hole count? Or, I mean, how do you work? Like, if with 54 holes to play, if you're outside the 7 – is it okay if you're inside the 8 after 36? Do you know what I mean? Like, which one works? Because
The 54, Gary Player came from 7 down.
I was counting backwards. But
you were counting backwards.
I meant to say after the 18 versus after the 36, right?
Right.
I mean, if you're outside the 18, can you still jump back in after
outside
the 36?
Absolutely.
Even though it's never been done before.
Absolutely. Oh, okay. Yep, and Gary Player came from 7 shots down in 78 to win.
Yeah, all right. I was a long way of saying I'm not sure what kind of stock I'm putting into Tiger, but I didn't have any stock into Tiger in the first place coming in. It's just impressive that he was able to get it. And obviously he's not too worried about getting cut records. He's just happy to be here and give himself a chance.
Although 24 in a row is the cut record.
It is. Now. I mean, he got the record. I get it. He didn't necessarily care about that. But.
Yep.
Nonetheless, pretty cool stuff. Hey, I wanted to get to a conversation. I had a chance to sit in on the interview with Max Homa and with Scottie Scheffler. And Scheffler, in particular, talked about the wind. And,
yes.
and this kind of illustrates the challenge that these players have faced over the first 2 rounds here. So here's Scheffler talking about it, and then I got a chance to jump in and do a follow-up question about this win, and he took it a little bit deeper.
I mean, when I was walking out to the first tee, I was fairly surprised with how many people were under par already. Going into today with the forecast the way it was supposed to be, and I've played this tournament once before in some pretty high winds, and it's an extremely challenging golf course. I felt like, you know, today I just did a really good job of Teddy, I would say, did a really good job of kind of, you know, guessing the wind correctly, if that makes sense. And, we stole a few shots on the par threes, I felt like. And then, I played the par fives well.
Brian?
Yeah, Scotty, you talk about guessing the winds. Can you give us just an example of one of the shots or some of the shots you had to deal with and how it maybe changed or affected the shot in order to control it with these winds?
You want me to go through all the shots or no, I think when you kind of make the turn, like you get down there on number 10 and then, Number 10's a hole with the way the wind direction is today. It can be very challenging when you have all those trees blocking you, and then hit a nice shot in there. But we got up to number 11, and it was gusty all day today. And number 11's a 520-yard par 4, and it starts blowing like 35 miles an hour directly in our face. Just these big gusts. You can see the trees are blowing like crazy. And you know, I tried to wait until it stopped, but it just never stopped. So I hit it, and then you're standing over there over an approach shot. I don't even remember what I had in, but I had a 4-iron in my hand, and I hit an incredibly good golf shot that still was short of the green. And then, you know, you get to number 12, and that was another example of a shot that I hit exactly how I wanted to. You know, we were trying to hit a 60 shot, and it was about 150 pin. And, you know, on number 11, I probably got 35 yards of hurt on my 4-iron. And so playing for 10 on the next 8-iron is, you know, not a crazy amount of wind to be playing for. And so it's just kind of one of those deals where you really are guessing sometimes. And I hit the shot exactly how I wanted to, and the wind stopped, and it airmailed the green. But I can kind of hand my club to Teddy and just be like, well, we do what we tried to do. I mean, you can't get every wind right. It's not possible. And so did a good job of kind of staying in the moment there, and then hit a great bunker shot after that.
Really appreciate Scotty for going into a little more detail on what he's facing. I mean, that gives you the idea, right? And you've talked about how the guys have been trying to flight it down.
Yep.
They have to keep it under the tree line.
Yep.
But mostly it's about committing. I find that to be the toughest thing. You know, when I'm out just playing a regular round of golf, forget about difficult conditions, winds, whatever.
Right.
It's committing to the shot. And the worst shot, I've said this to my buddies all the time, I'd rather be wrong than to be indecisive.
Right.
You don't have the luxury or the room or the margin for error on a golf course like this, that the margin for error is razor sharp line. And adding in the difficulty of the winds, you have to commit to that. And that's why he said you just have to be okay with wherever it ends up, as long as you commit and execute the shot that you intend to hit. And then sort of a little bit of luck has to come into play on how that wind hits it, huh?
Yeah, you got to put the ball in the right positions going into the greens as well. You know, you try to keep it under the hole as much as you can so that you always have uphill putts. But when you get those side hills or those downhill putts, and they are as slick as these greens are right now, it's really tough to control that ball from wobbling and wiggling and that kind of thing. You know, one of the things that the guys that have played here a lot, Tiger Woods and a lot of the guys, is making sure that you miss the shot in the correct position. If you do miss it, or if the wind hits it, or whatever, that you keep it in the correct position. Case in point, 18th hole, Tiger hits his shot up the left-hand side, left of the bunker, but he knows he's got that whole bowl where the flag is, and he can hit it up there, and he can use the banks or whatever if the ball comes out a little bit quick or whatever, and it's going to get back down by the hole. And of course, he made a 4 or 5 footer to get in the house at even par for the second round. So those are the things that the guys that have played here a lot understand.
That's that nuanced stuff, and I love that. Scottie Scheffler, by the way, has, as he reiterated, Carl Jackson's book of secrets, kind of like the cheat codes of getting around Augusta. Ben Crenshaw's old caddy that was, you know, the Ben suggested he go talk to early on when he came. And that's something that's, I think, it's, I mean, the more you can get, the better. Tiger's talked about how he loves to kind of share that information with the younger guys. Let's talk about a couple of notables here, Bob. I'm looking at Will Zalatoris. We didn't know exactly what to expect out of Willie Z. I mean, he kind of took this place by storm, and he makes the cut. He shoots 70 in the opening round, comes back with 77 in difficult conditions. He is at +3, tied for 30th. Rory McIlroy, he's in a bid for the career Grand Slam, his 10th attempt. He was taking a different approach. He came in a little bit later, didn't want to do the big interviews, limited it to 10 minutes, and he goes out and shoots 71, 77. He's +4, tied 35th. Tony Finau, off to a good start with an opening 71, struggled to get into the house on Friday with a 78. And the defending champion, John Rahm, hosted the Tuesday Champions Dinner, then shot 73-76. He's +5, tied 44, and is able to make it inside the cut line. Some of the guys not so fortunate, Justin Rose. Justin Rose, 73-78. Justin's a guy that I tend to look at every year as a dark horse. He's had great success here, some terrific rounds. Unfortunately, he is down the road. Justin Thomas, this is a little mystery. He and Bones split up here just before the week of the Masters. Had to figure that was maybe some sort of a sign that didn't seem right. Sam Burns, I know, is one of your favorites. Opened with 80, kind of behind the eight ball. Came back with a really impressive 73 in difficult conditions on Friday.
How about Victor Hovland? Think and swing, search and swing, and also he missed the cut as well.
We could go into a whole show on Victor Hovland, and we might with some of the interviews that he did. Boy, he is down a rabbit hole on some swings there.
Jordan Spieth, after a quad on 15 yesterday, he missed the cut as well. Guys like Dustin Johnson, and he missed the cut as well. With a big round in the second round.
I wanted to talk about some of those LIV players real quickly because that's obviously a story coming in here. Not quite as big of a story as it has been in the past, but at least by my unofficial account, I've got players making the cut at Bryson, Cam Smith, Pat Reed, Tyrrell Hatton, Brooks Koepka, Phil Mickelson, Joaquin Niemann, and John Rahm. On the wrong side of the cut line, Sergio Garcia, Dustin Johnson, Charles Schwartzel, Adrian Meronk, and Bubba Watson.
Right. Right, and also the past champions that ended up making the cut. There was about 10 of them.
Yeah, Scottie Scheffler, Danny Willett, Pat Reed, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, John Rahm, Adam Scott, Matsuyama, Jose Maria Olazabal, and Vijay Singh. Come on, take your hat off for those two fellas in difficult conditions. I mean, unbelievable stuff there by those guys. That's unbelievable. And congrats to Neil Shipley, who shot 71-76 plus three to make the cut. He'll also be the low amateur, but the only amateur playing the weekend. So it is some really, really good stuff. Shaped up three at the top at six under par. Bob, what do you think?
Scheffler.
So, I mean, we picked him coming into the week.
Yep.
You got to like him. He's been playing the best golf, but boy, it's going to be a shootout. There's no question about it.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Really appreciate Dave Glauser, our producer. He's been great all week long. Thanks to the stations and the affiliates that picked up our updates. Continue to look for our recap coming up next week right here on Real Golf Radio. Everyone, enjoy the 88th Masters. It will deliver. For Bob Casper and Brian Taylor, that's it for us. The Masters edition of Real Golf Radio.